Welcome back to the Pep Talk podcast, the Persuasive Evangelism podcast. I'm Steve Osmond, again standing in for Christy Mayer and Andy Bannister. And thank you for joining us. I'm really, really excited about today's podcast. We have a guest with us, Belle Tindall. Belle, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. It's a joy. How are you doing?
I am very well, thank you.
Good.
So Belle, for those listening, Belle does a lot of podcasting, so she is now on the other side of the microphone, which is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing?
I mean, it's a disconcerting thing. Yeah, I'm probably a bit too much of a control freak to prefer this side of things.
Ah, fair enough. Okay, well, we'll let's see where this goes then. Yeah. Well, let me, for those who aren't familiar with you and your work, let me read a little bio that I have, and then we'll just leap into some questions for you. So Belle is a biblical scholar, writer, speaker, and podcaster. She's based at the Center for Cultural Witness, and she is the writer in residence at Seen and Unseen. She is also a columnist for Premier's Women Alive magazine and co-host of Re-Enchanting, a podcast that ponders whether our disenchanted world can be re-enchanted with the wonder and mystery of the Christian story. So you are fairly busy, I think.
Yeah. I just don't know how to say no.
I'm starting to wonder. I can see there's a lot in there. Again, thank you so much for taking the time to chat to us today. I'd love to just sort of press in on a few of those things and have you, tell myself and the listeners a little bit about the work that you do. And then we'll speak a bit about evangelism and especially with the podcast and you're involved in kind of, you know, what you're seeing and pick and random things. But before that, could you maybe give me 2 minutes on a bit of your background, your faith journey? Yourself becoming a Christian and then getting to where you are today, what like led you into this career path, if you will?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, so to start with, my faith, I have one of those testimonies that kind of starts before I do in that I was born into a Christian family, which is a real joy. And so in a way, like my parents, they have a much cooler testimony than I do. So I kind of just cling on to theirs and I'm like, well, I'll take yours as like the prequel to mine then. So I've always been in a Christian family. Jesus has always been a part of my life and faith. Well, he's been the whole of my life and faith as well. So I think you have these testimonies that are like someone jumping in to the ocean, and then you have ones where it's someone slowly wading in from the shore. And I definitely sit in like that latter category. It's just been a lifetime really of kind of just wading deeper and deeper into who God is and why that matters, you know? That's my testimony really. It's kind of not a dramatic one. I kind of wish it was, but there's beauty in the, there's beauty in this kind as well. And how did I get into this area of work? That is a great question. Slowly and unexpectedly, perhaps. I think from a really young age, I loved the Bible, like loved it. I think it's because I just loved, but like, I just love reading. So I think my love for the Bible probably truly started just as a love of it, as some great stories. And that really is where everything came from, I think. So I was in a church that very graciously let me like do youth services and, you know, so like the more I was trusted with it, the more seriously I took it and the more I found myself wanting to go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And so that led me very much down an academic route. I've went all the way to a doctorate. I was just a perpetual student for many years. Yeah. And then all of a sudden that came to an end and a huge unexpected twist, which is where I always thought my academia and my love of the Bible, I always thought that would only ever be for a Christian context, because actually, naturally, I've spent my entire life not being natural at evangelism, which is hilarious now that I'm on this podcast. So I always thought this will be for Christians, this will be for the church. And just a huge plot twist is I started working for a center called the Center for Cultural Witness. And its whole vision is is about how do we creatively, confidently, clearly explain the beauty and the relevance and the depth of the Christian faith to people who aren't Christians, but who are curious. Mm-hmm. And so that's been really recent. So that's been my last year and a half, 18 months or so, that I've had to like really like retrain myself, unlearn a lot and then learn a lot of new things. And so some of the stuff you mentioned in the bio has just been a part of that, I think.
Okay, very good. Well, that is, super, super interesting, quite the journey. You mentioned the PhD studies. I was going to ask you about that, actually.
What
did you focus on in those?
Yeah, so I did it in biblical studies. Here's the thing, is it gets narrower and narrower and narrower. So biblical studies, and then I went for New Testament, and then I went for John, the Gospel of John in particular. And then I went for one chapter in the Gospel of John, John 4, Jesus' conversation with a Samaritan woman. And so I wrote 100,000 words on that one chapter, which people are like, that's
probably impressive.
Yeah, but the funny thing is that it wasn't enough. Like, I was like, I need 100,000 more. Like, the beauty of Jesus and the genius of John, how can I sum that up? So I went a few different ways with that chapter. I really went deep and just tried to kind of excavate some of the goodness. And that includes, you know, feminist theology, because of course the Samaritan woman is such a rich character and she's such an anomaly. That you could also go down Jewish Christian relations and the way the Old Testament is present in the Gospel of John. I even did like a chapter on memory and things. So I went in some really random directions, but it was so fun.
I can imagine that. Just from hearing that, it actually does spark, maybe more of like an apologetic question. If you're out talking to people, and I'm sure that, you know, if anyone spends any amount of time on social media or, you know, just listening to what's going on out there, there is this idea that Christianity is oppressive to women.
Yes.
So we don't have a huge amount of time, but if someone said that to you in 2 minutes, how would you kind of persuasively maybe push back on that and invite them into a conversation? What would you say to that question?
Yeah, so I think the problem is that there's kind of different answers as to why it's not. And I can only represent my field of thought. But I think the first thing to do is acknowledge that, the church has got it wrong. You know, like not completely dismiss it, be like, the church is messed up, you know, we're broken and we're messy. That's, I'll acknowledge the truth in that. But I would also say that Jesus, it all comes down to Jesus for me. I think feminist theology and the reason why Christianity is good news for women is Jesus. I see it again and again and again, time after time after time. He intentionally goes out of his way to equip, empower, champion, liberate women in a way that was so radical and is still so radical. We're still coming to terms with it. And he did that again and again. And women are so present, even in the resurrection. Like, I'm writing a piece today about Mary Magdalene witnessing the resurrection. Like, and that was so countercultural when women's testimonies, you know, weren't valued in Roman or Jewish court. Like, and then that was weaved into the early church. And there's a reason why at the beginning Christianity was called the religion for slaves, women, and children, because it was those people that it was specifically speaking to. And I don't think that's ever stopped. Now, we as the church might kind of be a bit of a barrier to this, but I personally, and this is where some people would be like, well, I personally think feminism wouldn't exist if Jesus had never existed. My feminism falls down when Jesus is taken out as the foundation, because it's built on what he taught me. And I personally believe it's built on what he's taught us as a culture. And that's where people will be like, stop it. But I honestly dig into it. And that would be my provocative, like 2 minute evangelistic punch.
Fantastic. That is brilliant. you will start so many fantastic conversations with that. Just like said, like opens many doors. So I'm definitely going to bank that as a way to check on if I hear that objection. So that's great. So I think that falls into sort of the larger idea of, culture and where things are. From what I see, most of your work is focused in on that. So
yeah.
re-enchanting the podcast that you're involved in. Maybe could you tell us a little bit about that? What is it? What does it focus on? What's the point of it?
Yeah, it's been such a surprise into my life, re-enchanting. I love talking about it. So it's a podcast that I co-host. So it's produced by Seen and Unseen, which is a magazine site that maybe we'll talk about in a minute. But re-enchanting, I co-host it with Justin Briley, the apologetics legend that is Justin Briley. And so every episode we have a guest on. And so it's an interview style format. And then what we do is most of them are Christians, some of them aren't, but they just, there's something about Christianity that has either influenced their work or their worldview or something like that. And we just speak to them about it. We speak to them about what they think of Christianity. Yeah.
I think recently I saw you had Louise Perry on. Is that am I right?
Yeah. So she's a perfect example of someone who isn't so sure on the Christian faith for herself, but what she can't deny is the impact it's had on culture. So she's a really great example of this kind of that tension that we sometimes have. But it's called re-enchanting because it pulls from this, like, so Max Weber, you know, the sociologist, he sort of predicted this world of disenchantment, or he's German, so actually a more literal translation was he predicted an age of demagification, where we just lose our trust in and our appreciation of anything mystical, anything sacred, anything spiritual, anything transcendent, and we push all of that aside in favor of all things rational and logical and reasonable and measurable. And so he predicted this. And so what the podcast kind of asks is, was he right? Are we in that age? And if so, how can we re-enchant ourselves? That's the podcast. Joy. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, that is fantastic. I have caught, I've just caught the one episode of it so far, but it looks really, really cool. And I think just from what I'm seeing in terms of the culture around, that is really hitting the nail on the head. It does seem like there's this like sort of broad distrust toward, you know, all the previous sort of structures that seem to have not made good on what they promised in terms of meaning and fulfillment and life and all of that. And so I think it's such a good time to have that podcast. So what would you think then, maybe two questions. Mm-hmm. For the people you come across, sort of just in wider culture, I guess, what are some of the disenchantments that they are struggling with? What are the big questions they're asking? And then how do we as Christians go about sharing our faith in a way to show that better story, to show the wonder of the gospel, show that the Christian story makes sense of things? One of those two questions, if you will.
Yeah. So I think that what's been so interesting, particularly in the conversation around re-enchanting, so enchantment, disenchantment, re-enchantment, is we've had some guests on, and I'm kind of being more and more persuaded by this argument. We've had some guests on and say, I don't think we're disenchanted at all. We're just enchanted with different things. So, and I'm kind of getting more and more persuaded by that. So we had the author Frances Spufford come on. It was one of my very favorite episodes. It was one of the first ones we ever did. It's all the way back in season one. And he came on and he said, we are meaning-making creatures. We can't stop making enchantments. I think what might have happened, perhaps, is for some reason, Christianity, but it's probably wider than that, it's probably organized religion in general, has stopped being seen as a source that enchants. And lots of people have lots of theories on that about why, you know, maybe we washed it down because we thought, well, if people want rational, let's go rational. And we kind of scrubbed out the bits that were too hard to explain or too weird. Like in a lot of the episodes, I've been challenged by the fact that if you scrub out the weirdest parts of Christianity, you're left with quite a pallid thing. And if there's one thing that like the Jesus movement is not, it's that. So maybe it's that. Or, you know, I'm not sure. Maybe it's the fact that now, you know, there's such a rise in like spirituality and crystals and all of this So maybe it's that, oh yeah, we're not disenchanted in the way that we don't want the magic or the mystery, but we don't want all the strings attached to it that come with a god or that come with a church or that come with religion. Yeah. Like, we're like, we want it on our own terms and we don't want it to cost us anything. So I think, you know, you can put like individualism in there, if you know what I mean. So I'm kind of being more and more persuaded by those things. And also is, I think people have become disenchanted with the church, maybe. And I think in this age of sort of, I think in this age where, and I want to tread really carefully, like we're saying this, but we want everyone to be quite morally perfect, or we don't want anything from them at all. Well, what church leader, what church is going to stand up to that? And, you know, we idolize people and then they don't live up to it. And then that affects how enchanted we can be with the message that they were proclaiming. Do you know? So I think there's a lot of that as well. So that's sort of kind of some of the things that I'm seeing. And in which case, Christians then, like, what do we do about that? And I think...
Yeah, exactly. If that is where things are, and it seems like, well, you know, maybe it does have a bit of a bleak look to it. Well, you know, what do we do? How do we ourselves get that re-enchantment back if we feel we've lost it? Yeah. And how do we take that out to the world, you know?
Yeah. So I think, again, this won't be the same for everyone, but for me, I've been really challenged by the world wants the enchantment. And I'm one of the people where I have scrubbed away what I think might be the hardest pills to swallow when it comes to Christianity in regards to the weirdest parts. When I say I believe in God, the details are not more far-fetched than that. But for some reason, I'm like, but don't ask me about the virgin birth because I'll get embarrassed. And don't ask me about that. Do you know what I mean? Like the oddest parts of it.
I do.
I've been really tempted, particularly when I was like a teenager and I just wanted to seem as normal as possible, to just strip all the bits that people might make fun of me for out of it. And what's been left? Nothing. Like, because not only is that the truth, you know, I believe it to be the true way of seeing the world, but also I personally believe that we are all born with a craving inside ourselves for mystery and for things that go bigger than, for things that are bigger than us and for things that we can't explain. I think we were born wanting and needing that. And therefore what I'm telling people with my vision of stripped down Christianity is that it won't fill those deepest parts of them, that like the whole deep to deep thing, I'm not offering that to them. And so I think that's been a big challenge for me. But also I think I see personally, and this is such a personal thing, and I also know that there is danger attached to it, but I see the rise of like people's spiritual curiosity. I see that as a really exciting thing because I can meet them in that.
It is.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's such, so like, you know, there's about to, sorry, go on.
So if you are seeing that sort of openness, or that sort of rise in this idea of, hey, we need spirituality, maybe in a sort of vague, faceless sense.
Yeah.
How do you engage with that person?
Yeah. So I think what I would say is, so for example, there's an MA that is about to be launched, a master's degree in Exeter called a Master's in Magic Studies. And like all of this media uproar about how odd that is. Can you believe that people are going to be going to university and doing modules on spells? And I kind of said to them, well, I did my master's in biblical studies. Like, do you know what's in the Bible? There's talking donkeys. There's like, you want weird. I've got weird to offer
we've
you.
We've got weird, yeah.
We've got weird. So I think what I've learned to do is kind of be like, oh, I totally get that you've got a craving for that. Yeah, I do too. Yeah, yeah. This is where I find it. You know, like, so for example, I'm not convinced that the right way to go is just demonizing people all the time. So people who, so people who read tarot cards, for example, I'm like, I get that you have that craving because I believe we were made to live a prophetic life where we do tune into a voice that's not our own. I believe that's God. And I believe, you know, and you can go into like prophecy or whatever, or, you know, yeah, it's totally understandable that you want to go and seek healing from this person in this way. I also believe in supernatural healing. But for me, that comes through the power of the Holy Spirit because of Jesus. And so I think that would be my angle always, is to say, your craving, I personally believe, is really valid. Where you're finding it and where I find it is very different. Can I introduce you to where I find these things? And just come and see.
That is fantastic. Yeah, I think that is so helpful. And we can do it in so many different ways. I think that the way you've explored it here is so good. Just that example of that MA, I read up something about it recently, I had questions. Seeing it as a way, like a touchstone or a point of contact to actually then bring, hey, there's something that you're latching onto, which is good and legitimate. But let me show you where it sort of finds its truthfulness.
Yeah.
I see we have already sort of come to the end of our time, which it sucks because I'm having so much fun chatting to you. But for those listening who want to follow the work that you're doing and the different podcasts and your writing and all of that, where can they find you and follow you in the non-creepy sense?
In the non-creepy sense, yeah. Well, you could kind of go to the separate sources. So I always want to point people towards Seen and Unseen, because I'm just one contributor of hundreds, and it's a beautiful resource. Reenchanting is wherever you find your regular podcasts. And me, I'm just on social media. I should sort out a website or something. Maybe if I was a different type of organized person, I would. But you can just come find me on social media, Belle Tindall, and come say hi.
That is fantastic. Well, Belle, thank you so much for taking the time to chat to us today. It has been just so much fun chatting to you. And I hope everything goes really well with all the work that you're doing. And the Lord uses it for his glory, and that you just have so much fun in what you're doing.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been so, so fun. Thank you.
My pleasure. And we will hopefully chat to you again soon. Ciao for now.